when everything is fine with you and your body is comfortable, you've had enough to eat, you're not thirsty, your mind is relaxed, and you don't want anything to be different. In that situation, there are no affects, feelings, emotions that are vying for your attention or competing with your own simple nature, just your own being, the baseline you, the self that is always present. So let your body just simply relax and let your mind relax. See if you can find that space of comfort where you can let the mind relax and just appreciate your body and your mind for what they are, as they are at this moment. Just relaxing into the reality of the situation that you're experiencing. Appreciating it perhaps as Ishwara. Interested, not trying to be different. In the situation of relaxed being where nothing is calling for your attention, just notice your own nature. What is your own simple presence like? You're just simply being here. It's not a matter of having a sad experience or a happy experience or any experience, because you're simply not clinging at the moment or asking the world to be different. You're simply being with what is. Letting the mind relax and the body relax. In the situation, let the mind as though relax into your own presence. Enjoy. Take refuge in. Revel in. All of these words are often used. But what is that like for you to let the mind just simply be with yourself, be with your own presence? What does it mean for your mind? To become aware of the stability of your presence. You are the only thing that doesn't come and go. Your being is the one thing that is stable, that can't change and won't change. It's always the same. It is the one thing the mind can always count on. The mind can always count on your being to never leave it, and it can count on it never being able to leave it. The mind, even were it to want to leave the self, cannot. Just like the pot can't leave the clay. It doesn't have that option, and so the mind can't get away from the self. As long as the mind is there, the self will be there. So this is where trust is deserved. The self deserves trust because it will never leave you. It will never change on you. It will never reject you. It will never change its mind about you. It will never go away. It will never die. And so it deserves your trust. Nothing else in the creation deserves trust in that way. Not that we don't love and trust in a relative way. But we can't have absolute trust for something that by its nature will and can change. Will, can, or have to leave. We can always trust the self to never be a source of sorrow. Because its nature is changeless. It's not going to change its nature on you to become a source of sorrow when it itself, by its nature, is ananda, wholeness, fullness. One meditation is to say as a mantra, I am whole and complete. Where those words are labeling not creating but rather labeling and pointing to your nature. In Sanskrit you can say anandoham. Anandoham. Aham, I. Ananda, aham. I am Ananda. Anandoham. Nityanandoham. I am always Ananda. Timeless Ananda. These are just words defining, pointing to the simplicity of my being. My mind enjoying the fullness of myself. Acts in the world. Responds, engages in the world. Not to become happy, but from the fullness of my own being, already happy. What do we mean by that happiness or ananda or wholeness when it's referring to the simple me? Who am I? The simple being that I am, the conscious being that I am. What makes this simple, unassuming ananda so beloved to the mind? That the mind is satisfied staying home. Mind doesn't have a roving eye. It likes to stay home. Why? Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kritikam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini. Verse 49. Durena hyavaram karma. Durena hyavaram karma. Buddhiyogadhananjaya. Buddhiyogadhananjaya. Buddhau sharanam andicca. Buddhau sharanam andicca. Kripana palahetavaha. Kripana palahetavaha. Durena. He. Avaram. Karma. Buddhi. Yogat. Dhananjaya. Buddhau. Sharanam. Anvicha. Kripanaha. Pala. Hetavaha. Durena. Being used adverbially here in Durena. By far. Without, just by far, by far. Okay. Karma is indeed, he avaram karma is inferior, avaram. Karma is inferior by far. Buddhi yogat, ablative, and that's ablative case that like ramat, singular, is being used in the sense of comparison. In Sanskrit they'll say, by far from something, right? By, it's inferior by far. It's inferior from, inferior to what? It's, they'll say inferior from something. They'll put in the ablative. So it's like when comparing Buddhi yoga to karma, karma is inferior by far. Okay. So avaram karma, Buddhi yoga, he dhananjaya. You're the one who is victorious through the use of the bow, victorious in war. It's named for Arjuna. Hey, Dhananjaya. So, that being so, Buddhau Sharanam Anvicha. Anvicha is the second person singular of the imperative, but we'll be learning that next week or the week after. So, Buddhau Sharanam Anvicha. Seek, then seek or go after. Your seek protection. Sharanam means protection or refuge. So, may you seek refuge in Buddhi. Lokana for buddhi. Buddhi yoga is karma yoga. In that buddhi, in that knowledge. So buddhi yoga, as we've seen, the Sankhya yoga and the buddhi yoga. It's buddhi yoga is karma yoga. It means that attitude toward karma that we call karma yoga. So we'll be talking more about that now. So seek refuge in buddhi and buddhi yoga. Kripanaha pala hetavaha. Those who are hetu hetavaha, guruhu guru guruvaha. Right? Nominative plural. Pala hetavaha. Hetu means cause. Those for whom the cause is the result. Those for whom the cause of your action, the reason you do the action, is for the result. In other words, the idea is this. Why I am acting in the world to reap the results of my action so that I can be happy. And I am acting in the world to get rid of those things that will make me unhappy. In other words, as I'm a samsari. I'm doing actions. Right? I'm doing actions in order to for the sake of my happiness. I'm fulfilling desires for the sake of my happiness. Pala means fruit, result. So the pala is the result of your actions. So the pala hetavaha are those people is a bahuvrihi. Those people for whom the cause, hetavaha, is the fruit, right? It is those people They are kripanaha. They are misers. They're miserly people. Impoverished, pitiable. Pitiable, miserly people. It's kripanaha. Don't do that. Don't get involved. Don't get involved in the world in that way. Rather, seek your refuge in buddhi yoga, in karma yoga. Okay? Because karma yoga is buddhi yoga. Karma yoga is by far superior. This way of behaving in the world is no comparison. The going after karma just for the sake of the pala, sake of the result, far inferior to buddhi yoga. Okay? That's the verse. That's this verse. Again, it's a praise, but it's more than a praise. He's been building up to this, trying to make you see it now for a couple of verses, and now he's giving some more information. Okay. There is no safety in samsara. There's no control in samsara. There's no safety in samsara. Control is a very weak sense of control, right? You do an action hoping that you will get the result. Right? You hope that you will get the result, and you hope that the result will make you happy and be what you want to be and give you what you want from it. And then you also hope that nobody will come in and ruin that for you and take it away. It's all hope, hope, hope. I hope it will work out. I hope it will work out. I hope it will make me happy. I hope it will make me happy. Why hope? Why can't you say, I know? I know. I know that if I do this, I will be happy. Right? I know if I perform this action, I will be happy. And if I know if I perform this action, I'll not only be happy, I'll stay happy. Not only don't know that, we know it's not true. We know that all of these things are not true. We know that there's no security in any type of result of an action. And so because we know that, because we're not stupid, even if we're in denial, we still, even to whatever degree we're in denial, that possibility is always there in the buddhi. Right? It's always there in your mind. It's always there it's always there on the edges of your mind. At any time you have a moment of happiness that is the result of a desire, if I could just have this to be happy. All of that enjoyment is always shrouded in a way, in a sense, by dukkha, by the sorrows which I know will come. So I have to be in denial. I have to push these things away, you know. And that is the situation of samsara. There can be, really, no total relaxation. There can't be total trust. There could be trust like this. I know that everything's bound by change. You can trust in that knowledge. You can trust in Ishwara in that way, you know, and even have a beautiful attitude toward it. But that's jnana. You know, that's trust in the truth. The truth is everything is bound by change. Everything will come and go. For a jnani, that's not a problem, because everything comes and goes in me. But I don't come and go. And I'm the ananda. I'm the source of the fullness or the well-being that my mind enjoys. In fact, my mind sitting in myself, enjoying myself, experiences the world. That attitude is jnana. Right? And that's the attitude that the karma yoga buddhi gives me. But what one normally suffers from, or what the normal attitude before a person becomes a seeker, becomes a mamukshu, and has that karma yoga buddhi, the normal attitude is, based upon your experience, is, I need this to be happy. Because that's our experience. When I fulfill a desire, I experience that moment of happiness. The horrible thing about it, about this, is that that's all I have. That's all I have. Because I haven't differentiated yet. I haven't differentiated the nature of happiness or the psychodynamics of happiness. I don't know what the locus of happiness is. I only know from experience how I get happiness. And I get happiness primarily from controlling my environment, from fulfilling my desires. That's how I get happiness. And so my mind is very used to going out and trying to negotiate in the world, fulfilling my desires so I can get this happiness. When I get the happiness, that's when I feel all is well with me. So what is my choice? You know? This is the state of samsara. Now, the state of jnanam is much different than that. For jnani, so now we're going to have the karma yoga in between here. So the ajnani, who's the samsari, who's not a seeker, who doesn't have self-knowledge, they are dependent totally on the experience of their mind. The experience of your mind really is what's giving you happiness. And so how do you get to have the right type of a mind? A happy mind. Go back to being total samsari. How do you get a happy mind? Well, you have to fulfill your desires. Things have to go well for you. You have to be able to get your way. The world has to be accommodating you. It has to be and behaving in a way that you agree with. Right? It has to be giving you what you want on many, many different levels. And as it's giving me what I want, my mind can relax in that situation. Naturally, when I'm being given what I want, my mind relaxes. Everybody's mind, not just yours. Everybody's mind relaxes. In fact, when we're getting exactly what we want, we're like Jivan Muktas. Right. All is well with me. Right? So you have, like, sometimes Swamiji will joke, you know, like for a person in India, in the old days anyway, Madras coffee in the south.
Oh, yeah.
We used to love the Madras coffee. And a lot of the families in Tamil Nadu, they have their own way of making the Madras coffee. You know, they take it from raw beans and they'll roast the beans perfectly, and it just they know how to do it, and they do it every day. They roast the beans, and then they grind the beans, and then they make the Madras coffee. And they have a standard, you know, that perfect cup of coffee. They know what that is. And when they hit that perfect cup of coffee, all is well. It couldn't be better. So. And then, of course, you know when the coffee's not that good. You know what that perfect cup of coffee is, and you want to replicate that experience because nothing is better than that. Right? So we're connoisseurs in the world. We know also when we have these perfect experiences in the world where this is it, this is how I want to be, this is who I am, this all is well with me, this is perfect. Now if I could just keep it. Right? So everyone has had these glimpses of these perfect experiences that are generated by many, many things that have come together. Many things. It could be not only the environment is perfect, everybody is behaving perfectly, the weather is perfect, everybody's in a good mood, and I'm in a good mood. The situation is perfect, people are in a good mood, and I'm in a good mood, and then boom. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience. So many things can throw that off. Yeah. I mean, for instance, it's a very important thing to realize. It could be the perfect situation, one that I would love, the most desirable situation. And everybody could be in the best mood, except for me. Have you ever had that? Here I am in this perfect situation, everything is fine, everyone is fine, and there's nothing in me that can enjoy that situation. So there's something wrong with I'm off, maybe something's, I ate something, somebody said something a couple hours ago, who knows what the heck it is, but this perfect situation that normally I would absolutely love, I'm miserable in. You've all had that. You've had the opposite too, where the situation is the worst. It is the worst. Miserable. And you're completely fine in that situation. Why? Right? There's just something. Maybe you came into it in a good mood. Maybe you have a certain level of vairagya, dispassion in reference to this horrid situation. Somehow it's not affecting your mind, and so in this terrible situation that would normally make you absolutely miserable, you feel very happy with yourself. First of all, your mind has not been grasped by it. And then, so you're happy, so that gives you a sense of peace. And then you're patting yourself on the back. Look at, here I am in this situation that is terrible, and I feel just fine. Oh, that's really, okay. This is samsara, though, because we don't know why any of this is happening. Right? It's just happening, and I'm enjoying it, and I want to make it happen again. You know. And so the closest we can come is by repeating actions that have previously made me happy. Like, for instance, if I love to go to the ocean and walk along the beach, why do I love to do that? Well, because that activity has provided me with happiness. I love to eat Ben and Jerry's, or used to love to eat long time ago. ever since I've been dieting, that's a thing of the past. But I remember when I loved Ben and Jerry's Cherry Garcia. I just loved it. It was when I would eat that, it was just very beautiful, very relaxing. It was a nice experience. Well, why else would I love it? It was beautiful, it was relaxing, it tasted good, it was a nice experience. I wouldn't eat it if it made me miserable, right? So that's how experiences are. We seek out those experiences that have a track record for us of making us happy. It means these particular set of experiences, you know, whether it be food or drink or friendship or music or entertainment or things that I would, doesn't matter what it is. I have a whole list of experiences or people that have a track record of, you know, giving me some peace, sense of well-being. So I seek those things out, and I seek repetitive experiences, right? And in my mind, I'll think, these are the experiences, these are the situations that make me happy. In fact, I don't want my talk like this, but it's these situations that are giving me the happiness. And so I want to be around these situations or these people or this type of food or these type of movies or whatever it is. And so I try to surround myself with these type of things. And then the things that have a track record for making me unhappy, whether it be people or situations or jobs or scary movies or whatever it is, those type of things I avoid. I mean, I remember once when my youngest brother, talked me into going to see the alien many years ago. It was a terrible experience. I knew I didn't want to go because I don't like those kind of scary movies. But that particular experience stopped me from ever agreeing to go to a movie like that again. Because the experience was so unpleasant that I didn't even need a second experience. That was enough to keep me away from it. But this is how we learn in the world, right? But the problem is with this learning is that we do learn, it's a matter of control. Okay, these are the things, I've had good experiences here, I've had bad experiences here. And so we're gravitating, you know, to try to control the world so that we can have some instable stability. It's unstable stability. And we know that. We know it's unstable stability. But it's about the best that we can do. So here, Krishna is saying, don't do this. You know? It's so inferior. It is so inferior to karma yoga. Instead, do this. And now we have to remember, to really understand the Gita, you have to remember that the karma yoga is meant for a mumukshu who is gaining knowledge. Right? The karma yoga has to do with lifestyle. How can I, now that I'm a mumukshu, now that I'm gaining knowledge, how should my mind, how should I deal with my mind? How should I handle my mind in the world? Right? How should I deal with my desires? What type of activity should I be doing? And with what attitude should I be doing these activities until my knowledge has blossomed? In fact, Shankara here, he says, you know, you do this until you do this karma yoga, until it matures, until you let your mind mature in this karma yoga, right? And as the mind matures in that karma yoga, your knowledge roots. So the karma yoga, the maturing of the karma yoga and the gaining of knowledge, they both are helping each other. As I gain knowledge, the karma yoga becomes more natural. As the karma yoga becomes more natural, my mind gains a natural equipoise. And as it gains that natural equipoise, the owning of my knowledge becomes more natural. So they're both, it's like a kind of a cyclical. The one is helping the other is helping the one, like that. It keeps growing like that. So here he says, you do this, learn this. Learn this karma yoga attitude. Do this. The others who don't do this, they are misers. And Swamiji has this nice section of talking about this. What does he mean? What does Krishna mean? Others who don't have this, who are just practicing this, practicing karma in order to fulfill my desires, they're misers in the sense that they are not using their buddhi, right? They're not using their buddhi appropriately to the fullest capacity. Your buddhi is here, right? As a human being, you've been given this body, and this is going back to Viveka Chudamani for this, you know. You've been given this body, which is rare. Gaining this birth itself is rare. But now here you have this rare, rare birth. It's hard to get a human body. You've got this human body. You have sense organs. You have a mind. You know, you're an intelligent being. You have a mind. This mind, you have to use it. Use your mind. Think. Put your mind to use. Put your mind to the highest use. Don't just, like an automaton, go on experiencing the world without any conscious reflection. If you reflect over your experience, you will become a mumukshu. Right? If you reflect on your experience, if you use your mind, and you reflect on the nature of your experience, if you reflect on the nature of your moments of happiness, the cause of the happiness, the length of the happiness that you achieve, how you achieve it, what is actually going on there, if you reflect on these things, you think, you use your mind to reflect on your experience, you will become a mumukshu. You will gain that vairagya. You don't have any choice. Right? If you use the mind, the viveka, if you use your discrimination, right, and you have the mind here to use, you use this discrimination, what does it mean to have viveka in this term? It means that I'm analyzing the experiences that I have. And there's a certain things that I'm recognizing. Primarily that there is no experience that I'm having that's not bound by change. That's viveka. That's a huge recognition. But if I recognize that, every single thing that I experience, from my body to my mind to my sense organs to whatever my sense organs perceive, every experience that I have comes and goes. If I recognize that, then I can also take the next step. Say, if you say, okay, well, is there anything I can do about that? Viveka, is there something I can do about that? Well, let's put it this way. Yeah, everything changes. Everything comes and goes. Is that my fault? Are you inadequate or stupid or incompetent? Because everything comes and goes. So you would ask yourself that. You would have to say, no. Because you're not the one that made it that way. In other words, you can't stop the creation from being that way. That is the nature of the creation. Everything that exists within time and space, that is its nature. So say you recognize that. No, that doesn't have to do with me. That has to do with the nature of things. You're just thinking. This is not brain science. You don't really. When you think about it, it's right here in your face. It's right here, you know. We don't have to have 140 or 160 IQ. You can just, you know, have an average IQ. This is simple. It's simple enough that Krishna can say, think. Use your buddhi. Use your buddhi. Think about your experience. So say you recognize this. Well, every single thing in my experience is bound by change. All the conditions, anything that I lined up. And therefore I can have lasting happiness. Does that make sense? Is there any logic in it? Is there any logic in that? That these things that are continually bound by change can give any type of lasting experience at all? We've never had that experience, and we can't have that experience because of the nature of creation. And so if I do put two and two together, you know, I will gain vairagya. If that viveka is there, which is right in my face, the natural result of that will be vairagya. And vairagya is something simple. Vairagya, that we call it as dispassion, that's so misunderstood, because we think of dispassion often as shunning the world, or just not caring about the world, or becoming mopey toward the world. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with, I can no longer bring myself to ask the world to do for me what it cannot do. I can't bring myself to do that. I know, as I can watch myself repeating these habitual thinking, all along, shaking my head, knowing that these pursuits do not have the capacity to fulfill me. Okay? That's vairagya for a mumukshu. I recognize that as a fact. There's no possibility of getting any type of lasting condition out of conditions that are continually changing. It's not possible. From there, I go to the mumukshu term. Okay? So this is just a very kind of simple procedure. Unfortunately, it's not simple. Very many people don't think about it at all, so most people are going to fall into the miser category. You're not using your buddhi. Because if you were to use it, it's very simple. So now you have this mumukshutvam. Now this is where the problem comes in. You realize all of this, and all that you have is at your disposal as a human being is to manipulate the world. Your sense organs are directed outward. Your organs of action, your hands and your feet and your speech and your everything about you is only meant to respond to the world, right? And so now you hold up your hands to Bhagavan and say, liberate me. I do not have this solution. Right? Because once you see the step-by-step progression, you realize this isn't going to work and you have no idea what works. That's correct. This is when, then, you know, you seek a teacher. And it's when a person that has this viveka and vairagya and the mumukshutvam that comes from it, the whole tradition, what the Lord will say, is at that time I come. That time I come. I bring this knowledge to you. Because all the conditions are right for you to get that knowledge. No? You're ready for that knowledge. Okay, so now that knowledge, so this is where this is the condition of a student. That mumukshutvam is there, the viveka and the vairagya are there, therefore the mumukshutvam is there, and now the teaching is there. Okay? So this is the condition for somebody in karma yoga. This is your condition. And so now the thing is, all right, now I'm getting this knowledge, I'm gaining this knowledge, but my mind, to whatever degree, depending on how much viveka and vairagya are there, when I come to this knowledge, now, to whatever degree, my mind continues to just kind of habitually, you know, I need this to be happy and I need that. It just habitually goes out, you know. That kartritvam, that doership, is just habitually there until my mind knows, until it gains nishta, until it has clarity. So it takes a while for knowledge to take place, for the mind to gain that clarity. so that then it just sits in the Anand of myself. It's a jnani. You know, that person's a jnani then. But until then, there's this interim. I'm not a samsari. My knowledge is not clear yet. I'm gaining knowledge. This is an interim condition. And this is where the karma yoga comes in. So the Lord is trying to explain, okay, this is your condition, and it will be for a while. Be like this, you know. That karma yoga buddhi is that prasad, the first part, we'll get into this second way of looking at it in a minute. That prasad buddhi, you go ahead, don't worry about it, you do your actions. Take yourself to be a karta. Take yourself to be a doer, whenever that is occurring. You do your actions, you know. Do what is there to be done. But accept the results of the action as prasada. In doing that, that prasada buddhi, that means that you're free to act. You're free to engage in the world. You're free to do your karmas. You're free to fulfill your desires. As long as you accept the results from me. Because if you accept the results from me, as coming from me with that prasada buddhi, then whether the result is as I want it to be or as I don't want it to be, the attitude toward the result is totally different. Shankara has the neatest statement here. He says, well, we'll see it in the next verse, but just to tell you what it is now. He says, in the Bhasha, he says, you do this because, he says, these karmas, you know, these karmas, these actions that you do as a karta, as a doer, these karmas have for their swabhava, their nature, bondage. They bind by nature. That's what they do. Right? You do an action, I want to do this. I do this so that I can be happy. That's a karma. I'm doing this for this result. So that I can get this, so that I can be happy. That's why I'm doing it. But that's the nature of karma. They're bandhana swabhava. The karmas are bandhana swabhava. By nature, they bind you. He said, but you know what? He goes, this samatva buddhi, this prasada buddhi, what it does is it turns these karmas away from their own nature. It stops them from being how they're supposed to be. Right? Because the karmas, these doing these actions so that I can be happy, I want this so that I can get this so that I can be happy. If you do this with this karma yoga, the samatva buddhi, you know, the prasada buddhi, then this binding nature doesn't occur. So you're in a sense, what you're doing is you're taking the thorn out of the karmas. You're de-thorning the karmas. And at the same time, you're free to do the karmas, right? You're free to do the karmas. You're free to do the actions. You're free to pursue your life and pursue your desires. But all the while, you're dethorning the results because you've stripped this, I need this to be happy. In other words, you're doing it in order to be happy. I want to do this thing so that I can be happy. That's why I'm doing it. But you've pulled the thorn out because if you have the prasada buddhi, then you're accepting the results from the Lord. Do you see the difference? That's why I like this, the temple example that I told last week. It's such a nice example whether you get water or chandan or a little flower as prasad or whether you get a full meal. In your mind, it makes no difference. Nothing happens. Nothing happens to you in terms of your well-being. You could even have gone to get the full meal and get the flower and have the thought, I wish I would have got the full meal. And you are still fine. Right? You're still fine. Even if you do an action for a particular result, you really want that result, you don't get the result, but what happens inside? You're going to have, I really wish I could have gotten that. I really wanted that. But what happens to me inside with the prasada buddhi? Nothing. You can happily say, I really wanted it to turn out this other way. You can happily say, sounds odd, but it's true. You can happily say, you know, that would have really made me happy if I would have gotten that. But I can happily say that. It's a different level of happiness. It's a different level of shanti, a different level of peace, right? My mind not reacting, not having tensed up, can say, I would have enjoyed that pleasure. I would have enjoyed the pleasure of that situation. But the one who's saying that has not become unhappy. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, it's the same, you know, we do this for ourselves in samsara all of the time. Like, if you're walking along the beach on a beautiful day and everything is wonderful, your mind is in a relaxed condition. And in that relaxed condition that has been given to you by your communion with a beautiful environment, say, mm-hmm. It's given you a relaxed condition. And then in that relaxed condition, you can experience the ups and downs of the world, of the moments that are coming. Right? You're experiencing it in a relaxed condition. You know, you're experiencing the fact that you forgot the cold drinks. I really wish I would have remembered that. I really wish I would have remembered the French bread, right? But you're remembering that in a relaxed condition. You're wishing for that in a relaxed condition so that your fullness has not been touched in spite of not gaining the sukha, not gaining the pleasure. Or the other two, your fullness has not been touched in spite of the negative event. You know, that's why I say sometimes we've all experienced this. Sometimes you're in the worst event, the worst situation. But you're, for whatever reasons, just in samsara, I mean, your well-being, your sense of peace, your sense that all of as well with me abides. As you're having things not go your way at all, and finding yourself in a really unpleasant situation. But still, all is well with me. The prasada buddhi gives you that because your devotion or your commitment is to Ishvara. Your commitment is to Ishvara. And your relationship, your primary relationship is with Ishvara. And so, worshipping Ishvara, in relationship with Ishvara, you act in the world. You fulfill your desires. All of the while accepting the results and understanding the results as being Ishvara, as being from the Lord. That knowledge, that understanding, which is that away from your knowledge? No, that's understanding is your knowledge. So you understand Ishvara, relate to Ishvara from the standpoint of your knowledge. And then in doing so, your mind enjoys what we call samatva buddhi. The samatva buddhi is your buddhi, your mind stays the same. No matter what the events are, your mind is the same. Your mind isn't ruffled. Because what will ruffle it if the prasada buddhi is there? What's ruffling it? So the prasada buddhi becomes primary. Why would we even let the prasada buddhi become primary? Because you have to remember, the one who is here is a mumukshu. You're a mumukshu. What does that mean? That viveka and vairagya are there to a high degree to even bring you to knowledge. So since the viveka and vairagya and mumukshu twin are there, what do you want to know? How to be in this world? How to be in this world in a way that my mind can own this knowledge? Okay, so now, say you have the prasada buddhi. Prasada buddhi is there, my mind enjoys a relative shanti. How does that shanti mature? How does that mind mature? Well, that mind matures, right, in the light of my knowledge as now my mind enjoys a relaxation. It's not running out all over the place. It enjoys a certain peace. that well-being itself settles the mind. Right? Just think of yourself. When your mind is at peace, right, there's a settledness that takes place. That's in that settledness, there's space to recognize my own, to be, for the mind to become, I would say, appreciative. For the mind to become appreciative of my own being. The very simple self that is always present. Right? Say your mind is enjoying Ashanti. You've kind of liberated it from the seeking pleasures. It's enjoying Ashanti, a peace. In that enjoyment, in that stability of enjoying peace, the mind comes more and more into relationship with me, the self that is always there. And what starts to become very clear to someone who's maturing into knowledge is that the peace of my own being is much more intimate or valuable to me than a bliss experience or a pleasurable experience or a moment of happiness. There's no comparison. The moment of happiness is what these kind of moments of happiness, moments of joy, moments of bliss are what we call sukha. That's sukha. So I would say, for the jnani, these moments of sukha are fine. There's nothing wrong with them. But I don't need them or particularly even want them. Because I don't want a moment of sukha. If there's a moment of happiness or bliss or something there, that's fine. But there's nothing in me that's going to seek that out, because the nature of yourself is better than that. It is the wholeness of your own being is more desirable than that. In this way, it's not to say anything about the niceness of sukha experiences. It's not a comment on that. It's just saying that the nature of your being is complete and whole and full. And so your mind enjoys staying home, right? So let me give you a samsara example, one that works for me. If you love your home, right? Say you have your home fixed up the way that you like it, and you're very comfortable at home, right? And so you look forward at night, you know, coming home, you know, lying down on the couch, relaxing. You love to be at home because your home is nice. You're comfortable there. But, you know, there's something really fun you could do. Somebody calls you up and says, you know, this would be really fun. You know, let's do this honestly. It'll be really, really fun. Really fun. And you say, yeah. Yeah. It would be really fun. It would be really fun. You know? But I'm just so happy here. You ever had that experience? I'm just so content here. I'm content here. I'm happy here. Yeah, that would be really fun. Yeah. But I don't want to move from where I am. I mean, I think all of us have had this type of experience. I just don't want to move from where I am because I'm very whole and content here. That's how the self is. The mind is whole and content with myself. So I have no desire, when I say my, I'm talking for all of us, I have no desire to move away from myself to have some fun. If the fun comes to me, you know, if the fun comes, or the exquisite experience, or the beautiful experience, or whatever, if these experiences come, that's fine. It's not like there's nothing wrong with them, but there's nothing in me that would wants to move away in order to try to generate a fun experience. That's the simplicity of the wholeness of your being. Your mind doesn't want to leave it. You know, it doesn't want to leave there. And so not wanting, and there's no reason that it needs to leave. It never has to leave. And that being the case, the fun experiences or the sukha experiences, the pleasurable experiences that come to you, you enjoy. Why shouldn't you enjoy them? They're pleasurable experiences. They're fun experiences. They're sukha experiences. They come your way. Yeah? And so you enjoy those. And when they go away, they're fine. Why is it fine when they go away? Well, because you didn't care if they came in the first place. Why didn't you care if they came in the first place? Because your mind is enjoying. Your mind is enjoying being at home with yourself. And so the pleasurable experiences come and go, and when they're there, your mind is still enjoying being at home with yourself, enjoying at home with yourself, enjoying the pleasant experience. And when the unpleasant experience goes, at home with yourself, the pleasant experience has passed on, passed away. It's gone away. Which is samsara, which is the nature of the world, which you're now not asking to be different. You're not asking it to be different. And so this, the kartrutvam, resolves naturally. It naturally resolves because the mind has no reason to ask the world to be different. Oh, I need to do that in order so that I can be happy. Why does a person think that? I need to do this so that I can be happy. Yeah. Yeah. Because they're not home. They're not, there's a sense of divorce or separation from your own well-being. Right? And so you, that the world is calling to you. But what about when there's no sense of separation there? That there's no sense of not being whole and complete. When that's how it is for a person, then what do you do? What do you do?
You take that as prasad.
Your prarabdha. Whatever the prarabdha is. Whatever is there as your life unfolds. Your life unfolds, it's your life. The prarabdha that takes you from birth to death, that is what's there. And that's given to you. It is yours. This is another fantastic thing. The prarabdha, which is your life from birth to death, is yours. Right? Completely. Even if people don't want it to be yours. If somebody says, well, somebody comes in and says, you know, I don't think she should have that. They can think whatever they want. It doesn't make any difference. It's your prarabdha. Nobody can do anything about it. Your prarabdha is also to suffer the person feeling that way about you. Mm-hmm. Right? That's all, right? That's also, that's like a papa. That's a negative. You have somebody looking at you, giving you the evil eye. They don't want you to have that. Or they
that's
want
to. Prarabdha.
Yeah. And it's the whole, that's the group prarabdha. Like here we are in this room. This is our, we're all here. We're all sharing this. This is the group prarabdha. We all are sharing it, right? It's kind of neat that way. But what is wonderful is that the prarabdha, that is what is yours. It will come to you. It will unfold. And so the jnani allows the prarabdha to unfold, allows Ishwara's story. This is Ishwara. So it just allows Ishwara, right, to unfold. And then what do I do? I do whatever is there to be done. I do what's there to be done. And I'm engaged in whatever that is because that's my prarabdha. That's my place. That's my part in this story. Right? But my self, my mind, is my mind saying, oh, I have to do this to be happy or I have to do this to accomplish this. Not at all. I do what's there to be done. Reveling in myself. So in the Gita, you'll see it's over and over. Reveling in the self. What does it mean? Sometimes we think reveling is too big. It's too big of a word because that's like the word bliss. It's like the word bliss. It's misleading. Reveling in myself means I just love staying home. You know, like we say that. I say, oh, you just revel being at home, don't you? Yeah, I do. I love to be at home. You just love to sit with yourself, don't you? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's nothing I'd rather do. I just like to be with myself. You know, so that's what they mean, reveling with yourself. It means that your mind loves that. You just love. You love to be with yourself. You love that there is a self. You love that you are that self. You love to just be with yourself. You love that you love to be with yourself, right? That's the type of reveling and loving to be with yourself. Then you appreciate the prarabdha that Ishwar has given you. Ishwar has dropped you here. This is it. This is the life. So you become kind of interested in it. That is all something. That's maturity that comes. That's the culmination of vairagya, right? Vairagya just matures into that all is well with me, right? And vairagya matures, viveka matures. It all matures into just the natural condition of a mind that is enjoying this knowledge. And so how to be in the world in such a way that my mind naturally, you know, matures in knowledge in a way so that I don't also have to be in so much pain during that process. How can I be in the world in a way that alleviates and relieves me from the pain as my mind matures in light of this knowledge and my doubts are resolved and all of this and I gain that jnana-nishtha? That's the karma yoga buddhi. And so the part that we're working on right now is the samatva buddhi, the prasada buddhi, you know, how to receive the results of my actions. Then the next verse you'll go into the kaushalam. What does it really mean to, kaushalam means skillful, to be really skillful in my actions. Part of it is that samatva buddhi. And the other is recognizing the superiority of the, your, in terms of the choice of action, of dharma. Just sticking to dharma, you know. Don't ever veer from dharma. The price is way too high, you know. And so understanding the mechanics of all of that, that dharma and the samatva buddhi, it gives you the mind of the karma yogi. Is almost, Krishna says this, the mind of the karma yogi is almost the same as the mind of the jnani in terms of peace, in terms of the shanti. The mind of the karma yogi, who still has the kartrutvam, but understands that samatva, that karma yoga buddhi, understands that the prasada buddhi, the peace that that karma yogi enjoys is the same, practically speaking, as the jnani. So Krishna will say this. So that's a big thing. The jnani, the one who just sits with the self. The shanti of the mind is the same. So let's stop there. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.